by revealing myself, I could have undone all of that. That would only have been bad had we failed, Vin said. We didn't. We could have. We didn't. Sazed paused, then smiled. Sometimes in a world of debate, questions, and self-doubt, Vin's simple bluntness was refreshing. Regardless, he continued, Tyndall is a member of the Synod, a group of Keeper Elders who guide our sect. I have been in rebellion against the Synod a number of times during my past, and by returning to Luthadel, I am defying them once again. She has good reason to be displeased with me. Well, I think you're doing the right thing, Vin said. We need you. Thank you, Lady Vin. I don't think you have to listen to Tyndall, she said. She's the type who acts like she knows more than she does. She is very wise. She's hard on Elland. Then she probably does so because it is best for him, Sazed said. Do not judge her too harshly, child. If she seems off-putting, it is only because she has lived a very hard life. Hard life? Vin asked, tucking her notes back into her pocket. Yes, Lady Vin, Sazed said. You see, Tyndall spent most of her life as a terrace mother. Vin hesitated, hand in pocket, looking surprised. You mean she was a breeder? Sazed nodded. The Lord Ruler's breeding program included selecting a few special individuals to use for birthing new children, with the goal being to breed Farrakemi out of the population. Tyndall had, at last count, birthed over 20 children, he said, each with a different father. Tyndall had her first child when she was 14, and spent her entire life being taken repeatedly by strange men until she became pregnant. And because of the fertility drugs the breeding masters forced upon her, she often bore twins or triplets. I see, Vin said softly. You are not the only one who knew a terrible childhood, Lady Vin. Tyndall is perhaps the strongest woman I know. How did she bear it? Vin asked quietly. I think I would probably have just killed myself. She is a keeper, Sazed said. She suffered the indignity because she knew that she did a great service for her people. You see, Farrakemi is hereditary. Tyndall's position as a mother ensured future generations of Farrakemists among our people. Ironically, she is exactly the sort of person that the breeding masters were supposed to avoid letting reproduce. But how did such a thing happen? The breeders assumed they'd already cut Farrakemi out of the population, Sazed said. They started looking to create other traits in the terrace. Docility, temperance. They bred us like fine horses. And it was a great stroke when the Synod managed to get Tyndall chosen for their program. Of course, Tyndall has very little training in Farrakemi. She did fortunately receive some of the copper mines that we keepers carry. So during her many years locked away, she was able to study and read biographies. It was only during the last decade, her childbearing years through, that she was able to join and gain fellowship with the other keepers. Sazed paused, then shook his head. By comparison, the rest of us have known a life of freedom, I think. Great, Vin mumbled, standing and yawning.
Another reason for you to feel guilty.
You should sleep, Lady Vin, Sazed noted. For a few hours, Vin said, walking toward the door, leaving him alone again with his studies.
In the end, my pride may have doomed us all.
31. Phylan Frendu was not Ska. He had never been Ska. Ska made things or grew things. Phylan sold things. There was an enormous difference between the two. Though some people had called him Scar, even now he could see that word in the eyes of some of the other assemblymen. They regarded Phylon and his fellow merchants with the same disdain that they gave the 8 Scar workers on the assembly. Couldn't they see that the two groups were completely different? Phylon shifted a bit on the bench. Shouldn't the assembly hall at least have comfortable seating? They were waiting on just a few members. The tall clock in the corner said that 15 minutes still remained until the meeting began. Oddly, one of those who had yet to arrive was Venture himself. King Elland was usually early. Not king anymore, Phylon thought with a smile. Just plain old Elland Venture. It was a poor name, not as good as Phylon's own. Of course, he had been just Lynn until a year and a half ago. Phylon Frondieu was what he had dubbed himself after the collapse. It delighted him to no end that the others had taken to calling him the name without pause. But why shouldn't he have a grand name? A lord's name. Was Phylon not as good as any of the noblemen sitting aloofly in their places? Oh, he was just as good, better even. Yes, they had called him Scar, but during those years they had come to him out of need, and so their arrogant sneers had lacked power. He'd seen their insecurity. They'd needed him, a man they called Scar. But he'd also been a merchant who wasn't noble, something that wasn't supposed to have existed in the Lord Ruler's perfect little empire. But noblemen merchants had to work with the obligators, and where there had been obligators, nothing illegal could occur. Hence Phylon. He'd been an intermediary of sorts, a man capable of arranging deals between interested parties who, for various reasons, wanted to avoid the watchful eyes of the Lord Ruler's obligators. Phylon hadn't been part of a thieving crew. No, that was far too dangerous, and far too mundane. He had been born with an eye for finances and trades. Give him 2 rocks, and he'd have a quarry by the end of the week. Give him a spoke, and he'd change it to a fine horse-drawn carriage. 2 bits of corn, and he'd eventually have a massive shipment of grain sailing to the farmost dominance markets. Actual noblemen had done the trades, of course, but Phylon had been behind it all. A vast empire of his own. And still they couldn't see. He wore a suit as fine as theirs. Now that he could trade openly, he had become one of the wealthiest men in Luthadel. Yet the nobleman ignored him, just because he lacked a valid pedigree. Well, they would see. After today's meeting? Yes, they would see. Phylon looked out into the crowd, looking anxiously for the person he had hidden there. Reassured, he looked toward the nobleman of the assembly, who sat chatting a short distance away. One of their last members, Lord Ferson Penrod, had just arrived. The older man walked up onto the assembly's dais, passing by the members, greeting each in turn.
"Phylon," Penrod said, noticing him. "A new suit, I see. The red vest suits you."
"Lord Penrod, why, you're looking well. You got over the other night's ailment, then?"
"Yes, it passed quickly,"
the lord said, nodding a head topped with silver hair.
"Just a touch of stomach ills."
"Pity," Phylon thought, smiling. "Well, we'd best be seated. I see that young Venture isn't here, though."
"Yes,"
Penrod said, frowning. He'd been most difficult to convince to vote against Venture. He had something of a fondness for the boy. He had come around in the end. They all had. Penrod moved, joining the other nobleman. The old fool probably thought he was going to end up as king. Well, Phylon had other plans for that throne. It wasn't Phylon's own posterior that would sit in it, of course. He had no interest in running a country. Seemed like a terrible way to make money. Selling things, that was a much better way. More stable, less likely to lose one his head. Oh, but Phylon had plans.
He'd always had those. He had to keep himself from glancing at the audience again. Phylon turned, instead, to study the assembly. They had all arrived except Venture. 7 noblemen, 8 merchants, and 8 ska workers. 24 men with Venture. The 3-way division was supposed to give the commoners the most power, since they ostensibly outnumbered the noblemen. Even Venture hadn't understood that merchants weren't ska. Phylon wrinkled his nose. Even though the ska assemblymen usually cleaned up before coming to the meetings, he could smell the stink of forges, mills, and shops on them. Men who made things. Phylon would have to be certain they were put back in their place once this was over. An assembly was an interesting idea, but it should be filled only with those who deserved the station. Men like Phylon. Lord Phylon, he thought. Not long now. Hopefully, Elland would be late. Then maybe they could avoid his speech. Phylon could imagine how it would go anyway. Now see, this wasn't fair. I should be king. Here, let me read you a book about why. Now, can you all please give some more money to the ska? Phylon smiled. The man next to him, Getru, nudged him. You think he's going to show up? He whispered. Probably not. He must know that we don't want him. We kicked him out, didn't we? Getru shrugged. He'd gained weight since the collapse, a lot of it.
I don't know, Lin. I mean, we didn't mean... He was just... The armies... We have to have a strong king, right? Someone who will keep the city from falling.
Of course, Phylon said. And my name isn't Lin. Getru flushed.
Sorry.
We did the right thing, Phylon continued. Venture is a weak man. A fool.
I wouldn't say that, Getru said. He has good ideas.
Getru glanced downward uncomfortably. Phylon snorted, glancing at the clock. It was time, though he couldn't hear the chimes over the crowd. The assembly meetings had become busy since Venture's fall. Benches fanned out before the stage, benches crowded with people, mostly ska. Phylon wasn't sure why they were allowed to attend. They couldn't vote or anything. More Venture foolishness, he thought, shaking his head. At the very back of the room, behind the crowd, opposite the stage, sat 2 large, broad doors letting in the red sunlight. Phylon nodded towards some men, and they pushed the doors shut. The crowds hushed. Phylon stood to address the assembly. Well, since... The assembly hall doors burst back open. A man in white stood with a small crowd of people, backlit by red sunlight. Elland Venture. Phylon cocked his head, frowning. The former king strode forward, white cape fluttering behind him. His Mistborn was at his side, as usual, but she was wearing a dress. From the few times Phylon had spoken with her, he would have expected her to look awkward in a noblewoman's gown. And yet she seemed to wear it well, walking gracefully. She actually looked rather fetching. At least until Phylon met her eyes. She did not have a warm look for the assembly members, and Phylon glanced away. Venture had brought all of his allomancers with him, the former thugs of the Survivor's crew. Elland apparently wanted to remind everyone who his friends were. Powerful men. Frightening men. Men who killed gods. And Elland had not one but 2 Terrasmen with him. One was only a woman. Phylon had never seen a Terras woman before. But still it was impressive. Everyone had heard how the stewards had left their masters after the collapse. They refused to work as servants anymore. Where had Venture found not one but 2 of the colorful-robed stewards to serve him? The crowd sat quietly, watching Venture. Some seemed uncomfortable. How were they to treat this man? Others seemed... awed. Was that right? Who would be awed by Elland Venture, even if the Elland Venture in question was clean-shaven, had styled hair, worn new clothing, and... Phylon frowned. Was that a dueling cane the king was wearing? And a wolfhound at his side?
He's not king anymore, Phylon reminded himself again.
Venture strode up onto the assembly stage. He turned, waving for his people, all eight of them, to sit with the guards. Venture then turned and glanced at Phylon.
Phylon, do you want to say something?
Phylon realized he was still standing.
I was just... Are you Assembly Chancellor?
Elland asked. Phylon paused.
Chancellor?
The king presides at assembly meetings, Elland said. We now have no king, and so by law, the assembly should have elected a chancellor to call speakers, adjudicate time allotments, and break tie votes. He paused, eyeing Phylon. Someone needs to lead. Otherwise, there is chaos. Despite himself, Phylon grew nervous. Did Venture know that Phylon had organized the vote against him? No, he didn't. He couldn't. He was looking at each of the assembly members in turn, meeting their eyes. There was none of the jovial, dismissible boy that had attended these meetings before. Standing in the militaristic suit, firm instead of hesitant, he almost seemed like a different person.
You've found a coach, it appears, Phylon thought. A little too late. Just wait.
Phylon sat down.
Actually, we didn't get a chance to choose a chancellor, he said. We were just getting to that.
Elland nodded, a dozen different instructions rattling in his head. Keep eye contact. Use subtle but firm expressions. Never appear hurried, but don't seem hesitant. Sit down without wiggling. Don't shuffle. Use a straight posture. Don't form your hands into fists when you're nervous. He shot a quick glance at Tyndall. She gave him a nod.
Get back to it, El, he told himself. Let them sense the differences in you.
He walked over to take his seat, nodding to the other seven noblemen on the assembly.
Very well, he said, taking the lead. Then might I nominate a chancellor?
Yourself?
Asked Driddle, one of the noblemen. His sneer seemed permanent, as far as Elland could tell. It was a passably appropriate expression for one with such a sharp face and dark hair.
No, Ellen said. I'm hardly an unbiased party in today's proceedings. Therefore I nominate Lord Penrod. He's as honorable a man as we're likely to find, and I believe he can be trusted to mediate our discussions.
The group was quiet for a moment.
That seems logical,
Heddle, a forge worker, finally said.
All in favor?
Elland said, raising his hand. He got a good 18 hands, all of the ska, most of the nobility, only one of the merchants. It was a majority, however. Elland turned to Lord Penrod.
I believe that means that you are in charge, Ferson.
The stately man nodded appreciatively, then rose to formally open the meeting, something Elland had once done. Penrod's mannerisms were polished, his posture strong as he stood in his well-cut suit. Elland couldn't help but feel a little jealous, watching Penrod act so naturally in the things that Elland was struggling to learn.
Maybe he would make a better king than I, Elland thought. Perhaps.
No, he thought firmly. I have to be confident. Penrod is a decent man, and an impeccable noble, but those things do not make a leader. He hasn't read what I've read and doesn't understand legislative theory as I do. He's a good man, but he's still a product of his society. He doesn't consider ska animals, but he'll never be able to think of them as equals. Penrod finished the introductions, then turned to Elland.
Lord Venture, you called this meeting. I believe that the law grants you first opportunity to address the assembly.
Elland nodded thankfully, rising.
Will 20 minutes be enough time?
Penrod asked.
It should be,
Elland said, passing Penrod as they traded places. Elland stood up at the lectern. To his right, the floor of the hall was packed with shuffling, coughing, whispering people. There was a tension to the room. This was the first time Elland had confronted the group that had betrayed him.
As many of you know,
Elland said to the 23 Assembly members. I recently returned from a meeting with Straff Venture, the warlord who is, unfortunately, my father. I would like to give a report of this encounter. Realize that because this is an open meeting, I will adjust my report to avoid mentioning sensitive matters of national security. He paused just slightly, and saw the looks of confusion he had expected. Finally, Phylon the merchant cleared his throat.
Yes, Phylon? Elland asked.
This is all well and good, Elland, Phylon said. But aren't you going to address the matter that brought us here?
The reason we meet together, Phylon, Elland said, is so that we can discuss how to keep Luthadel safe and prosperous. I think the people are most worried about the armies, and we should primarily seek to address their concerns. Matters of leadership in the Assembly can wait.
I see, Phylon said, obviously confused.
The time is yours, Lord Venture, Penrod said. Proceed as you wish.
Thank you, Chancellor, Elland said.
I wish to make it very clear that my father is not going to attack this city. I can understand why people would be concerned, particularly because of last week's preliminary assault on our walls. That, however, was simply a test. Straff fears attacking too much to commit all of his resources. During our meeting, Straff told me that he had made an alliance with Set. However, I believe this to have been a bluff, if, unfortunately, a bluff with teeth. I suspect that he was indeed planning to risk attacking us, despite Set's presence. That attack has been halted.
Why?
Asked one of the worker representatives.
Because you're his son?
No, actually, Elland said. Straff is not one to let familial relationships hamper his determination.
Elland paused, glancing at Vin. He was beginning to realize that she didn't like being the one who held the knife at Straff's throat, but she had given him permission to speak of her in his speech. Still, she said it was all right, he told himself. I'm not choosing duty over her.
Come now, Elland, Phylon said. Stop with the theatrics. What did you promise Straff to keep his armies out of the city?
I threatened him, Elland said. My fellow assemblymen, when facing down my father and Parley, I realized that we, as a group, have generally ignored one of our greatest resources. We think of ourselves as an honorable body, created by the mandate of the people. However, we are not here because of anything we ourselves did. There is only one reason we have the positions we do, and that reason is the survivor of Hath Sin.
Elland looked the members of the Assembly in the eyes as he continued.
I have at times felt as I suspect that many of you do. The survivor is a legend already, one we cannot hope to emulate. He has power over this people, a power stronger than our own, even though he is dead. We're jealous, insecure even. These are natural human feelings. Leaders feel them just as acutely as other people, perhaps even more so. Gentlemen, we cannot afford to continue thinking like this. The survivor's legacy doesn't belong to one group, or even to this city alone. He is our progenitor, the father of everyone who is free in this land. Whether or not you accept his religious authority, you must admit that without his bravery and sacrifice, we would not now enjoy our current freedom.
What does this have to do with Straff? Phylon snapped.
Everything, Elland said. For though the survivor is gone, his legacy remains. Specifically, in the form of his apprentice.
Elland nodded toward Vin.
She is the most powerful Mistborn alive, something Straff now knows for himself. Gentlemen, I know my father's temperament. He will not attack this city while he fears retribution from a source he cannot stop. He now realizes that if he attacks, he will incur the wrath of the survivor's heir. A wrath not even the Lord Ruler himself could withstand.
Elland fell silent, listening to the whispered conversations move through the crowd. News of what he'd just said would reach the populace and bring them strength. Perhaps even news would reach Straff's army through the spies Elend knew must be in the audience. He'd noticed his father's allomancer sitting in the crowd, the one named Zane. And when news reached Straff's army, the men there might think twice about obeying any orders to attack. Who would want to face the very force that had destroyed the Lord Ruler? It was a weak hope. The men of Straff's army probably didn't believe all of the stories out of Luthadel, but every little bit of weakened morale would help. It also wouldn't hurt for Elend to associate himself a little more strongly with the survivor. He was just going to have to get over his insecurity. Kelsier had been a great man, but he was gone. Elend would just have to do his best to see that the survivor's legacy lived on. For that was what would be best for his people. Vin sat with a twisted stomach, listening to Elend's speech.
"You okay with this?"
Ham whispered, leaning over to her as Elend gave a more detailed account of his visit with Straff. Vin shrugged.
"Whatever helps the kingdom."
"You were never comfortable with the way that Kel set himself up with the Ska. None of us were."
"It's what Elend needs," Vin said.
Tyndall, who sat just before them, turned and gave her a flat look. Vin expected some recrimination for whispering during the assembly proceedings, but apparently the terrace woman had a different kind of castigation in mind.
"The king,"
she still referred to Elend that way,
"needs this link with the survivor. Elend has very little of his own authority to rely upon, and Kelsier is currently the most well-loved, most celebrated man in the Central Dominance. By implying that the government was founded by the survivor, the king will make the people think twice about meddling with it."
Ham nodded thoughtfully. Vin glanced downward, however.
"What's the problem? Just earlier I was beginning to wonder if I were the hero of ages, and now I'm worried about the notoriety Elend is giving me?"
She sat uncomfortably, burning bronze, feeling the pulsing from far away. It was growing even louder.
"Stop it," she told herself. "Caesar doesn't think the hero would return, and he knows the histories better than anyone. It was foolish anyway. I need to focus on what's happening here."
After all, Zane was in the audience. Vin sought out his face near the back of the room, a light burn of tin, not enough to blind her, letting her study his features. He wasn't looking at her, but watching the assembly. Was he working at Straff's command? Or was this visit his own? Straff and Set both undoubtedly had spies in the audience, and of course Ham had guards mixed with the people as well. Zane unnerved her, however. Why didn't he turn toward her? Wasn't... Zane met her eyes. He smiled slightly, then turned back to his study of Elend. Vin felt a shiver despite herself. So did this mean he wasn't avoiding her?
"Focus," she told herself. "You need to pay attention to what Elend is saying."
He was almost done, however. He wrapped up his speech with a few comments on how he thought they could keep Straff off balance. Again, he couldn't be too detailed, not without giving away secrets. He glanced at the large clock in the corner. Done 3 minutes early, he moved to leave the lectern. Lord Penrod cleared his throat.
"Elend, aren't you forgetting something?"
Elend hesitated, then looked back at the assembly. "What is it that you all want me to say?"
"Don't you have a reaction?"
one of the Ska workers said.
"About what happened at the last meeting?"
"You received my missive," Elend said. "You know how I feel about the matter. However, this public forum is not a place for accusations or denunciations. The Assembly is too noble a body for that kind of thing. I wish that a time of danger were not when the Assembly had chosen to voice its concerns, but we cannot alter what has happened."
He moved to sit again.
"That's it?"
asked one of the Ska.
"You're not even going to argue for yourself?
try and persuade us to reinstate you?
Elland paused again.
No, he said. No, I don't think that I will. You have made your opinions known to me, and I am disappointed. However, you are the representatives chosen by the people. I believe in the power that you have been given. If you have any questions or challenges, I will be happy to defend myself. However, I am not going to stand and preach my virtues. You all know me. You know what I can do and what I intend to do for this city and the surrounding populace. Let that stand as my argument.
He returned to his seat. Vin could see hints of a frown on Tyndall's face. Elland hadn't given the speech that she and he had prepared, a speech giving the very arguments the assembly was obviously expecting.
Why the change? Vin wondered.
Tyndall obviously didn't think it was a good idea, and yet oddly Vin found herself trusting Ellen's instincts more than she did Tyndall's.
Well,
Lord Penrod said, approaching the lectern again.
Thank you for that report, Lord Venture. I'm not sure if we have other items of business.
Lord Penrod, Elland asked.
Yes.
Perhaps you should hold the nominations. Lord Penrod frowned.
The nominations for King, Penrod, Phylon snapped.
Vin paused, eyeing the merchant.
He certainly seems up on things, she noted.
Yes, Elland said, eyeing Phylon as well. In order for the assembly to choose a new king, nominations must be held at least 3 days before the actual voting. I suggest we hold the nominations now so that we can hold the vote as soon as possible. The city suffers each day it is without a leader.
Elland paused, then smiled.
Unless, of course, you intend to let the month lapse without choosing a new king.
Good to confirm that he still wants the crown, Vin thought.
Thank you, Lord Venture, Penrod said. We'll do that now, then. And how exactly do we proceed?
Each member of the assembly may make one nomination if he wishes, Elland said. So that we don't become overburdened with options, I would recommend that we all exercise restraint. Only choose someone that you honestly and sincerely think would make the finest king. If you have a nomination to make, you may stand and announce it to the rest of the group.
Penrod nodded, returning to his seat. Almost as soon as he sat, however, one of the Ska stood.
I nominate Lord Penrod.
Elland had to expect that, Vin thought. After nominating Penrod to be Chancellor, why give such authority to the man that he knew would be his greatest contender for the throne?
The answer was simple. Because Elland knew that Lord Penrod was the best choice for Chancellor.
Sometimes he's a little too honorable, Vin thought, not for the first time.
She turned to study the Ska assemblyman who had nominated Penrod. Why were the Ska so quick to unify behind a nobleman? She suspected that it was still too soon. The Ska were accustomed to being led by noblemen, and even with their freedom, they were traditional beings, more traditional even than the noblemen. A lord like Penrod, calm, commanding, seemed inherently better suited to the title of king than a Ska.
They'll have to get over that eventually, Vin thought. At least they will if they're ever going to be the people that Elland wants them to be.
The room remained quiet. No other nominations being made. A few people coughed in the audience, even the whispers now dead. Finally, Lord Penrod himself stood.
I nominate Elland Venture, he said.
Ah,
someone whispered behind her. Vin turned, glancing at Breeze.
What?
She whispered.
Brilliant, Breeze said. Don't you see? Penrod is an honorable man, or at least as honorable as noblemen get, which means that he insists on being seen as honorable. Elland nominated Penrod for Chancellor,
hoping in turn that Penrod would feel obligated to nominate Elland for King, Vin realized.
She glanced at Elland, noting a slight smile on his lips. Had he really crafted the exchange?
It seemed to move subtle enough for Breeze himself. Breeze shook his head appreciatively.
Not only did Elland not have to nominate himself, which would have made him look desperate, but now everyone on the Assembly thinks that the man they respect, the man they would probably choose as king, would rather have Elland hold the title. Brilliant.
Penrod sat, and the room remained quiet. Vin suspected that he also had made the nomination so that he wouldn't go uncontested to the throne. The entire Assembly probably thought that Elland deserved a chance to reclaim his place. Penrod was just the one who was honorable enough to voice the feeling.
But what about the merchants? Vin thought. They've got to have their own plan.
Elland thought that it was probably Phylon who had organized the vote against him. They'd want to put one of their own on the throne, one who could open the city gates to whichever of the kings was manipulating them, or whichever one paid the best. She studied the group of eight men in their suits that seemed, somehow, even more fine than those of the noblemen. They all seemed to be waiting on the whims of a single man. What was Phylon planning? One of the merchants moved, as if to stand, but Phylon shot him a harsh glance. The merchant did not rise. Phylon sat quietly, a nobleman's dueling cane across his lap. Finally, when most of the room had noticed the merchant's focus on him, he slowly rose to his feet.
"I have a nomination of my own," he said.
There was a snort from the ska section.
"Now who's being melodramatic, Phylon?" one of the assemblymen there said. "Just go ahead and do it. Nominate yourself."
Phylon raised an eyebrow.
"Actually, I'm not going to nominate myself."
Vin frowned, and she saw confusion in Ellen's eyes.
"Though I appreciate the sentiment," Phylon continued, "I am but a simple merchant. No, I think that the title of king should go to someone whose skills are a little more specialized. Tell me, Lord Venture, must our nominations be for people on the Assembly?"
"No," Elland said. "The king doesn't have to be an assemblyman. I accepted this position after the fact. The king's primary duty is that of creating, then enforcing, the law. The Assembly is only an advisory council with some measure of counterbalancing power. The king himself can be anyone. Actually, the title was intended to be hereditary. I didn't expect certain clauses to be invoked quite so quickly."
"Ah, yes," Phylon said. "Well, then, I think the title should go to someone who has a little practice with it, someone who has shown skill with leadership. Therefore, I nominate Lord Ashwether Set to be our king."
"What?" Vin thought with shock as Phylon turned, gesturing toward the audience. A man sitting there removed his ska cloak, pulling down the hood, revealing a suit and a face with a bristling beard.
"Oh, dear,"
Breeze said.
"It's actually him?"
Vin asked incredulously as the whispers began in the audience. Breeze nodded.
"Oh, that's him. Lord Set himself."
He paused, then eyed her.
"I think we might be in trouble."
"I had never received much attention from my brethren. They thought that my work and my interests were unsuitable to a world-bringer. They couldn't see how my work, studying nature instead of religion, benefited the people of the 14 lands."
32. Vin sat quietly, tensely, scanning the crowd.
Set wouldn't have come alone, she thought.
And then she saw them, now that she knew what she was looking for. Soldiers in the crowd, dressed like ska, forming a small protective buffer around Set's seat. The king did not rise, though a young man at his side did.
Maybe 30 guards, Vin thought. He may not be foolish enough to come alone, but entering the very city you're besieging?
It was a bold move, one that bordered on stupidity. Of course, many had said the same about Elland's visit to Straff's army. But Set wasn't in the same position as Elland. He wasn't desperate, wasn't in danger of losing everything. Except he had a smaller army than Straff, and the Kolos were coming. And if Straff did secure the supposed Atium supply, Set's days as leader in the West would certainly be numbered. Coming into Luthadel might not have been an act of desperation, but it also wasn't the act of a man who held the upper hand. Set was gambling. And he seemed to be enjoying it. Set smiled as the room waited in silence, assemblymen and audience alike too shocked to speak. Finally, Set waved to a few of his disguised soldiers, and the men picked up Set's chair and carried it to the stage. Assemblymen whispered and commented, turning to aides or companions seeking confirmation of Set's identity. Most of the noblemen sat quietly, which should have been enough of a confirmation in Vin's mind.
"He's not what I expected," Vin whispered to Breeze as the soldiers climbed up on the dais.
"Nobody told you he was crippled?"
Breeze asked.
"Not just that," Vin said. "He's not wearing a suit."
He had on a pair of trousers and a shirt, but instead of a nobleman's suit coat, he was wearing a worn black jacket.
Plus that beard. He couldn't have grown a beast like that in 1 year. He must have had it before the collapse.
"You only knew noblemen in Luthadel, Vin," Ham said. "The Final Empire was a big place with a lot of different societies. Not everybody dresses like they do here."
Breeze nodded.
"Set was the most powerful nobleman in his area, so he needn't worry about tradition and propriety. He did what he wished, and the local nobility pandered. There were 100 different courts with 100 different little lord rulers in the empire, each region having its own political dynamic."
Vin turned back to the stage front. Set sat in his chair, having yet to speak. Finally, Lord Penrod stood.
"This is most unexpected, Lord Set."
"Good," Set said. "That was, after all, the point."
"Do you wish to address the assembly?"
"I thought I already was."
Penrod cleared his throat, and Vin's tin-enhanced ears heard a disparaging mutter from the nobleman's section regarding Western noblemen.
"You have 10 minutes, Lord Set," Penrod said, sitting.
"Good," Set said. "Because unlike the boy over there, I intend to tell you exactly why you should make me king."
"And that is?" one of the merchant assemblymen asked.
"Because I've got an army on your damn doorstep," Set said with a laugh.
The assembly looked taken aback.
"A threat, Set?"
Elland asked calmly.
"No venture," Set replied. "Just honesty. Something you central noblemen seem to avoid at all cost. A threat is only a promise turned around. What was it you told these people? That your mistress had her knife at Straff's throat? So were you implying that if you weren't elected, you'd have your Mistborn withdraw and let the city be destroyed?"
Elland flushed.
"Of course not."
"Of course not," Set repeated.
He had a loud voice, unapologetic, forceful.
"Well, I don't pretend and I don't hide. My army is here and my intention is to take this city. However, I'd much rather that you just give it to me."
"You, sir, are a tyrant," Penrod said flatly.
"So?" Set asked. "I'm a tyrant with 40,000 soldiers. That's twice what you've got guarding these walls."
"What's to stop us from simply taking you hostage?" asked one of the other noblemen. "You seem to have delivered yourself to us quite neatly."
Set bellowed a laugh.
"If I don't return to my camp this evening, my army has orders to attack and raise the city immediately, no matter what. They'll probably get destroyed by venture afterward, but it won't matter to me, or to you at that point. We'll all be dead."
The room fell silent.
"See, venture?" Set asked. "Threats work wonderfully."
"You honestly expect us to make you our king?" Elland asked.
"Actually, I do," Set said. "Look, with your 20,000 added to my 40, we could easily hold these walls against Straff.
We could even stop that army of Kolos.
Whispers began immediately, and Set raised a bushy eyebrow, turning to Elend.
You didn't tell them about the Kolos, did you?
Elend didn't respond.
Well, they'll know soon enough, Set said. Regardless, I don't see that you have any other option but to elect me.
You're not an honorable man, Elend said simply. The people expect more from their leaders.
I'm not an honorable man, Set asked with amusement. And you are? Let me ask you a direct question, Venture. During the proceedings of this meeting, have any of your allomancers over there been soothing members of the Assembly?
Elend paused. His eyes glanced to the side, finding Breeze. Vin closed her eyes.
No, Elend, don't.
Yes, they have, Elend admitted.
Vin heard Tyndall groan quietly.
And, Set continued, can you honestly say that you've never doubted yourself? Never wondered if you were a good king?
I think every leader wonders these things, Elend said.
Well, I haven't, Set said. I've always known I was meant to be in charge, and I've always done the best job of making certain that I stayed in power. I know how to make myself strong, and that means I know how to make those who associate with me strong as well. Here's the deal. You give me the crown and I'll take charge here. You all get to keep your titles, and those of the Assembly who don't have titles will get them. In addition, you'll get to keep your heads, which is a far better deal than Straff would offer, I assure you. The people get to keep working, and I'll make certain that they're fed this winter. Everything goes back to normal, the way it was before this insanity began a year back. The Scar work, the nobility administrates.
You think they'd go back to that? Elend asked. After all we've fought for, you think I will simply let you force the people back into slavery?
Set smiled beneath his large beard.
I wasn't under the impression that the decision was yours, Elend Venture.
Elend fell silent.
I want to meet with each of you, Set said to the Assemblyman. If you'll allow, I wish to move into Luthadel with some of my men. Say a force of 5,000. Enough to make me feel safe, but not to be of any real danger to you. I'll take up residence in one of the abandoned keeps, and wait until your decision next week. During that time, I'll meet with each of you in turn, and explain the benefits that would come from choosing me as your king.
Bribes, Elend spat.
Of course, Set said. Bribes for all of the people of this city. The foremost bribe being that of peace. You're so fond of name-calling, Venture. Slaves, threats, honorable. Bribe is just a word. Looked at another way, a bribe is just a promise. Turned on its head.
Set smiled. The group of Assemblymen was silent.
Shall we vote, then, on whether to let him enter the city? Penrod asked.
5,000 is way too many, one of the Ska Assemblymen said.
Agreed, Elend said. There's no way we can let that many foreign troops into Luthadel.
I don't like it at all, another said.
What? Said Phylon. A monarch inside our city will be less dangerous than one outside, wouldn't you say? And besides, Set has promised us all titles.
This gave the group something to think about.
Why not just give me the crown now? Set said. Open your gates to my army.
You can't, Elend said immediately. Not until there is a king, or unless you can get a unanimous vote right now.
Vin smiled. Unanimous wouldn't happen in that case as long as Elend was on the Assembly.
Bah, Set said,
but he obviously was smooth enough not to insult the legislative body further.
Let me take up residence in the city, then.
Penrod nodded.
All in favor of allowing Lord Set to take up residence inside with, say, 1,000 troops?
A full 19 of the Assemblymen raised their hands. Elend was not one of them.
It is done, then, Penrod said. We adjourn for 2 weeks.
This can't be happening, Elend thought. I thought maybe Penrod would provide a challenge, Phylon a lesser one. But one of the very tyrants who was threatening the city? How could they? How could they even consider his suggestion?
Elend stood, catching Penrod's arm as he turned to walk off the dais.
Ferson, Elend said quietly, this is insanity.
We have to consider the option, Elend.
Consider selling out the people of this city to a tyrant?
Penrod's face grew cold, and he shook Ellen's arm free.
Listen, lad, he said quietly. You are a good man, but you've always been an idealist. You've spent time in books and philosophy. I've spent my life fighting politics with the members of the court. You know theories. I know people.
He turned, nodding to the audience.
Look at them, lad. They're terrified. What good do your dreams do them when they're starving? You talk of freedom and justice when two armies are preparing to slaughter their families.
Penrod turned back to Elend, staring him in the eyes.
The Lord Ruler's system wasn't perfect, but it kept these people safe. We don't even have that anymore. Your ideals can't face down armies. Set might be a tyrant, but given the choice between him and Straff, I'd have to choose Set. We'd probably have given him the city weeks ago if you hadn't stopped us.
Penrod nodded to Elend, then turned and joined a few of the noblemen who were leaving. Elend stood quietly for a moment.
We have seen a curious phenomenon associated with rebel groups that break off of the Final Empire and attempt to seek autonomy, he thought, recalling a passage from Itves's book, Studies in Revolution. In almost all cases, the Lord Ruler didn't need to send his armies to reconquer the rebels. By the time his agents arrived, the groups had overthrown themselves. It seems that the rebels found the chaos of transition more difficult to accept than the tyranny they had known before. They joyfully welcomed back authority, even oppressive authority, for it was less painful for them than uncertainty.
Vin and the others joined him on the stage, and he put his arm around her shoulders, standing quietly as he watched people trail from the building. Set sat surrounded by a small group of assemblymen, arranging meetings with them.
Well, Vin said quietly, we know he's Mistborn.
Elend turned toward her.
You sensed allomancy from him?
Vin shook her head.
No.
Then how do you know? Elend asked.
Well, look at him,
Vin said with a wave of her hand.
He acts like he can't walk. That has to be covering up something. What would be more innocent than a cripple? Can you think of a better way to hide the fact that you're a Mistborn?
Vin, my dear, Breeze said. Set has been crippled since childhood, when a disease rendered his legs useless. He's not Mistborn.
Vin raised an eyebrow.
That has to be one of the best cover stories I've ever heard.
Breeze rolled his eyes, but Elend just smiled.
What now, Elend? Ham asked. We obviously can't deal with things the same way now that Set has entered the city.
Elend nodded.
We have to plan.
He trailed off as a young man left Set's group, walking toward Elend. It was the same man who had been sitting next to Set.
Set's son, Breeze whispered. Njordan.
Lord Venture,
Njordan said, bowing slightly. He was perhaps about Spook's age.
My father wishes to know when you would like to meet with him.
Elend raised an eyebrow.
I have no intention of joining the line of assemblymen waiting upon Set's bribes, lad. Tell your father that he and I have nothing to discuss.
You don't? Njordan asked.
And what about my sister? The one you kidnapped?
Elend frowned.
You know that isn't true. My father would still like to discuss the event,
Njordan said, shooting a hostile glance at Breeze.
Besides, he thinks that a conversation between you two might be in the city's best interests. You met with Straff in his camp. Don't tell me that you aren't willing to do the same for Set inside your own city.
Elend paused.
Forget your biases, he told himself.
You need to talk to this man, if only for the information the meeting might provide.
All right, Elend said. I'll meet with him.
Dinner in 1 week? Njordan asked. Elend nodded curtly.
As the one who found Elendi, however, I became someone important, foremost among the world bringers.
33. Vin lay on her stomach, arms folded, head resting on them as she studied a sheet of paper on the floor in front of her. Considering the last few days of chaos, it was surprising to her that she found returning to her studies to be a relief. A small one, however, for her studies held their own problems.
The deepness has returned, she thought. Even if the mists only kill infrequently, they've begun to turn hostile again. That means the Hero of Ages needs to come again too, doesn't it?
Did she honestly think that might be her? It sounded ridiculous when she considered it. Yet she heard the thumping in her head, saw the spirit in the mists. And what of that night over a year gone when she'd confronted the Lord Ruler? That night when somehow she'd drawn the mists into herself, burning them as if they were metal.
That's not enough, she told herself. One freak event, one I've never been able to replicate, doesn't mean I'm some mythological savior.
She didn't even really know most of the prophecies about the hero. The logbook mentioned that he was supposed to come from humble origins, but that pretty much described every Ska in the Final Empire. He was supposed to have hidden royal bloodlines, but that made every half-breed in the city a candidate. In fact, she'd be willing to bet that most Ska had one or another hidden nobleman progenitor. She sighed, shaking her head.
Mistress?
Orsir asked, turning. He stood on a chair, his forepaws up against the window as he looked out at the city.
Prophecies, legends, foretellings, Vin said, slapping her hand down on her sheet of notes. What's the point? Why did the Terrace even believe in these things? Shouldn't a religion teach something practical?
Orsir settled down on his haunches upon the chair.
What would be more practical than gaining knowledge of the future?
If these actually said something useful, I'd agree. But even the logbook acknowledges that the Terrace prophecies could be understood many different ways. What good are promises that could be interpreted so liberally?
Do not dismiss someone's beliefs because you do not understand them, mistress.
Vin snorted. You sound like Sazed. A part of me is tempted to think that all these prophecies and legends were devised by priests who wanted to make a living.
Only a part of you? Orsir asked, sounding amused.
Vin paused, then nodded.
The part that grew up on the streets. The part that always expects a scam.
That part didn't want to acknowledge the other things she felt. The thumpings were getting stronger and stronger.
Prophecies do not have to be a scam, mistress, Orsir said. Or even really a promise for the future. They can simply be an expression of hope.
What do you know of such things? Vin said dismissively, setting aside her sheet.
There was a moment of silence.
Nothing, of course, mistress, Orsir eventually said.
Vin turned toward the dog.
I'm sorry, Orsir. I didn't mean... Well, I've just been feeling distracted lately.
Thump, thump, thump. You need not apologize to me, mistress, Orsir said. I am only Khandra.
Still a person, Vin said. If one with dog breath.
Orsir smiled.
You chose these bones for me, mistress. You must deal with the consequences.
The bones might have something to do with it, Vin said, rising. But I don't think that carrion you eat is helping. Honestly, we have to get you some mint leaves to chew.
Orsir raised a canine eyebrow.
And you don't think a dog with sweet breath would attract attention?
Only from anyone you happen to kiss in the near future, Vin said, returning her stacks of paper to her desk.
Orsir chuckled softly in his canine way,
turning back to study the city. "Is the procession finished yet?" Vin asked.
"Yes, mistress," Orsier said. "It is difficult to see, even from a height, but it does look like Lord Set has finished moving in. He certainly did bring a lot of carts."
"He's Olrianne's father," Vin said. "Despite how much that girl complains about accommodations in the army, I'd bet that Set likes to travel in comfort."
Orsier nodded. Vin turned, leaning against the desk, watching him and thinking of what he'd said earlier. Expression of hope.
"The Chondra have a religion, don't they?"
Vin guessed. Orsier turned sharply. That was enough of a confirmation.
"Do the keepers know of it?" Vin asked.
Orsier stood on his hind legs, paws against the windowsill.
"I should not have spoken."
"You needn't be afraid," Vin said. "I won't give away your secret. But I don't see why it has to be secret anymore."
"It is a Chondra thing, mistress," Orsier said. "It wouldn't be of any interest to anyone else."
"Of course it would," Vin said. "Don't you see, Orsier? The keepers believe that the last independent religion was destroyed by the Lord Ruler centuries ago. If the Chondra managed to keep one, that suggests that the Lord Ruler's theological control of the Final Empire wasn't absolute. That has to mean something."
Orsier paused, cocking his head, as if he hadn't considered such things.
"His theological control wasn't absolute," Vin thought, a bit surprised at the words. "Lord Ruler, I'm starting to sound like Sazed and Elend. I've been studying too much lately."
"Regardless, mistress," Orsier said, "I'd rather you didn't mention this to your keeper friends. They would probably begin asking discomforting questions."
"They're like that," Vin said with a nod. "What is it your people have prophecies about, anyway?"
"I don't think you want to know, mistress."
Vin smiled.
"They talk about overthrowing us, don't they?"
Orsier sat down, and she could almost see a flush on his canine face.
"My people have dealt with the contract for a great long time, mistress. I know it is difficult for you to understand why we would live under this burden, but we find it necessary. Yet we do dream of a day when it may not be."
"When all the humans are subject to you?" Vin asked.
Orsier looked away.
"When they're all dead, actually."
"Wow."
"The prophecies are not literal, mistress," Orsier said. "They're metaphors, expressions of hope. Or at least that is how I have always seen them. Perhaps your terrace prophecies are the same? Expressions of a belief that if the people were in danger, their gods would send a hero to protect them? In this case, the vagueness would be intentional and rational. The prophecies were never meant to mean someone specific, but more to speak of a general feeling, a general hope."
If the prophecies weren't specific, why could only she sense the drumming beats? "Stop it," she told herself. "You're jumping to conclusions." "All the humans dead," she said. "How do we die off? The Chondra kill us?"
"Of course not," Orsier said. "We honor our contract, even in religion. The stories say that you'll kill yourselves off. You are of ruin, after all, while the Chondra are of preservation. You're actually supposed to destroy the world, I believe, using the Kolos as your pawns."
"You actually sound sorry for them," Vin noted with amusement.
"The Chondra actually tend to think well of the Kolos, mistress," Orsier said. "There is a bond between us. We both understand what it is to be slaves. We both are outsiders to the culture of the Final Empire. We both..."
He paused.
"What?" Vin asked.
Might I speak no further? Orsior asked. I have said too much already. You put me off balance, mistress.
Vin shrugged. We all need secrets. She glanced toward the door. Though there's one I still need to figure out. Orsior hopped down from his chair, joining her as she strode out the door. There was still a spy somewhere in the palace. She'd been forced to ignore that fact for far too long. Elend looked deeply into the well. The dark pit, wide-mouthed to accommodate the comings and goings of numerous ska, seemed a large mouth opening up, stone lips spread and preparing to swallow him down. Elend glanced to the side, where Ham stood speaking with a group of healers.
"We first noticed when so many people came to us complaining of diarrhea and abdominal pains," the healer said. "The symptoms were unusually strong, my lord. We've already lost several to the malady."
Ham glanced at Elend, frowning.
"Everyone who grew sick lived in this area," the healer continued, "and drew their water from this well or another in the next square."
"Have you brought this to the attention of Lord Penrod and the Assembly?" Elend asked.
No, my lord. We figured that you..."
"I'm not king anymore," Elend thought. However, he couldn't say the words. Not to this man, looking for help.
"I'll take care of it," Elend said, sighing. "You may return to your patients."
"They are filling our clinic, my lord," he said.
"Then appropriate one of the empty noble mansions," Elend said. "There are plenty of those. Ham, send him with some of my guard to help move the sick and prepare the building."
Ham nodded, waving over a soldier, telling him to gather 20 on-duty men from the palace to meet with the healer. The healer smiled, looking relieved, and bowed to Elend as he left. Ham walked up, joining Elend beside the well.
"Coincidence?"
"Hardly," Elend said, gripping the edge of the well with frustrated fingers.
"The question is, which one poisoned it?" "Set just came into the city," Ham said, rubbing his chin. "Would have been easy to send out some soldiers to covertly drop in the poison."
"Seems more like something my father would do," Elend said. "Something to increase our tension, to get back at us for playing him for a fool in his camp. Plus he's got that Mistborn who could have easily placed the poison."
Of course, Set had had this same thing happen to him. Breeze poisoning his water supply back before he reached the city. Elend ground his teeth. There was really no way to know which one was behind the attack. Either way, the poisoned wells meant trouble. There were others in the city, of course, but they were just as vulnerable. The people might have to start relying on the river for their water, and it was far less healthy, its waters muddy and polluted by waste from both the army camps and the city itself.
"Set guards around these wells," Elend said, waving a hand. "Board them up, post warnings, and then tell the healers to watch with particular care for other outbreaks."
"We just keep getting wound tighter and tighter," he thought as Ham nodded. "At this rate, we'll snap long before winter ends." After a detour for a late dinner, where some talk about servants getting sick left her concerned, Vin went in and checked on Elend, who had just returned from walking the city with Ham. After that, Vin and Orsier continued their original quest, that of finding Doxin. They located him in the palace library. The room had once been Straff's personal study. Elend seemed to find the room's new purpose amusing for some reason. Personally, Vin didn't find the library's location nearly as amusing as its contents, or rather, lack thereof. Though the room was lined with shelves, nearly all of them showed signs of having been pillaged by Elend. The rows of books lay pocked by forlorn empty spots, their companions taken away one by one, as if Elend were a predator, slowly whittling down a herd. Vin smiled.
It probably wouldn't be too long before Elend had stolen every book in the small library,
carrying the tomes up to his study, then forgetfully placing them in one of his piles, ostensibly for return. Still, there were a large number of volumes left, ledgers, books of figures, and notebooks on finances, things that Elend usually found of little interest. Doxson sat at the library's desk now, writing in a ledger. He noticed her arrival and glanced over with a smile, but then turned back to his notations, apparently not wanting to lose his place. Vin waited for him to finish, Orsure at her side. Of all the members of the crew, Doxson seemed to have changed the most during the last year. She remembered her first impressions of him, back in Cayman's lair. Doxson had been Kelsier's right-hand man, and the more realistic of the pair. And yet there had always been an edge of humor to Doxson, a sense that he enjoyed his role as the straight man. He hadn't foiled Kelsier so much as complimented him. Kelsier was dead. Where did that leave Doxson? He wore a nobleman's suit, as he always had, and of all the crew members, the suits seemed to fit him the best. If he shaved off the half-beard, he could pass for a nobleman. Not a rich high courtier, but a lord in early middle age who had lived his entire life trading goods beneath a great house master. He wrote in his ledgers, but he had always done that. He still played the role of the responsible one in the crew. So what was different? He was the same person, did the same things. He just felt different. The laughter was gone, the quiet enjoyment of the eccentricity in those around him. Without Kelsier, Doxson had somehow changed from temperate to boring. And that was what made her suspicious. "This has to be done," she thought, smiling at Doxson as he set down his pen and waved her to take a seat. Vin sat down, Orsure padding over to stand beside her chair. Doxson eyed the dog, shaking his head slightly.